Hello, everyone, and such a warm welcome to you. I'm Molly Rowan Leach, and I am privileged and honored to be here with you all and with Shilpa Jain today. This is Restorative Justice on the Rise, a advocacy platform and people's media space since 2011, focusing on restorative justice and transformational practices of all kinds. And it's just so exciting to be talking with you today, Shilpa. And I wonder if we could just dive right in. What would you like to make known about yourself to the Global Restorative Justice on the Rise listeners? And thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Molly. It's so delightful to be here with you this morning. So my name is Shilpa Jain. Let's see, what do I want to work? I've been both doing that work through an organization called YES, yesworld.org, which focuses on the meeting point of personal, interpersonal, and systemic transformation with change makers around the world. And also, I started my work really with an organization called Shikshantar, based in India. That works on radically rethinking education and development. And so, really, I'm all about co-learning, unlearning, uplearning, and also how we can transform the ways we live and learn together so that we can create systems and ways of being that really support all life. That's a
Beautiful,
quick little
beautiful,
intro
beautiful.
for me.
And Yes World, you were the executive director, correct? And
Yes, I was for over 11 years.
Yeah, could you just tell us a little bit about the quick origins, the quick version of the origin story of Yes World? Because there's probably a lot of people in our listening audience globally that may yet to, for whatever reason, have known about
Yes, happy to. So, YES started in
it.
1990. It's a 35-year-old organization. It was founded by a couple teenagers here in California. At the time, Nancy Reagan was saying, just say no, as the kind of movement for young people to stay off of drugs and alcohol. And they said, as young people, that's not good enough. We need something to say yes to. And it started out as an environmental, like advocacy at environmental stewardship, trying to galvanize the next generation of young people to care for the earth. And pretty quickly in the first few years of its existence, realized that environmental issues couldn't be separated from social justice. They couldn't be separated from the way the economy ran and so many other things that were happening. And so, yes, started to switch gears from just focusing on environmental issues and starting to open up to all of the abilities. And so, skipping forward, in 1999, started hosting jams. And jams are this spirit of the musician's jam. So, bringing together change makers who are up to something in the world and who really want to link the inner process in our inside of ourselves with the interpersonal, the bridge building, especially working through conflict and different social and historical divides and systemic change. So, seeing them all interconnected deeply. And the jam is in the spirit of a musician's jam. We listen to each other, we learn from each other, we bring our own voice, our own instrument, our stories, our questions, our struggles, our insights, our brilliance, our pain, all of those things together to jam, to listen, to learn, to grow. And through that process, something that never existed before comes into existence. And it's pretty powerful, the kinds of solutions, possibilities, imagination, creativity, the things that emerge out of the jams. And so jams have been the primary work of YES over the last 26 years. And there are all different kinds of jams. Some of them are geographically place-based programs, so connecting people across Egypt or Pakistan or the North America. Some of them are more sector-based programs, like the Restoring Justice Jam, Law and Social Change, Arts and Social Change, Education Transformation. And some of them are identity-based jams, like the Black Diaspora Jam, LGBTQ queer jam, Asian diaspora jam, et cetera. So all different kinds of jams. And you can check out more if you're interested online, yesworld.org.
Beautiful. And on that note, too, I highly recommend Shilpa's pod Substack, that is, at Shilpa Jane, correct? That's the where we find you.
It's just shilpajane.substack.
It's
Tom.
perfect. It's and your writing is just extraordinary. But before we go into maybe framing and launching off of some discussion about the possibility of justice being alchemical, let's talk about the jam that you just held recently about, restorative justice. And could you tell us a little bit about what that entailed? What emerged from that? What are you seeing in the world right now from that experience? And what was exciting and inspiring to you?
Oh, there's so much I can say about that.
Right.
Okay, well, let me give a little tiny bit of background. This is the sixth Restoring Justice Jam, and we came up with that name, before launching the first one because there was a recognition that restorative and transformative justice, prison abolition, trying to end mass incarceration, trying to, provide different prison educational programs, also looking at how conflict was being worked with in schools and organizations and communities. How do we have transformative practice in that, where we're not just exacerbating wounds, but actually healing them? All of that kind of, we were like, there's not just, it's not just restorative. We are also restoring. We're trying to tell a new story and find stories, even from our indigenous roots in different places, that are need to come back into our world that we are maybe we've lost. So restoring, bringing new stories, and also connecting to stories, and offering ourselves as individuals a new story too, that none of us is frozen into one moment or even the worst thing we've ever done. That there is also always the possibility of restoring ourselves and restoring each other, and through that process, restoration, reparation, revolution, regeneration, all of these things are possible. So just a little background on it. And this was the sixth one. And the jam brings together practitioners, people who were incarcerated, people who are working on ending solitary confinement, or ending or providing better transitional services to people once they leave prison, people who are working in schools and organizations to try to infuse different kinds of restorative practice rather than our punitive, practices. All kinds of folks like that were there. That was true again this time. Oh, so many things to say. I think one of the things I'll say for me that still stays so strong and present is just the alchemizing of grief. That there is a lot of grief and rage and anger that lives inside of us. And to have a platform where that can come out and be seen and be witnessed with love, with compassion, with understanding, with curiosity, and with this possibility that this isn't also a frozen moment. This is something that can keep flowing like a river. Like, we can allow this, and in the flow, then as grief, anger does flow, then something possible emerges, which is like, there's a new space, because the space that has been crowded out by that grief, that anger, the frustration, any of that, is freed. And so, to be in an experience with people who are sort of committed to their own freedom and each other's freedom, and seeing that part of that is bearing witness to the wholeness of each person, the truth of each person, and fully welcoming ourselves and each other into that. Yeah, it was absolutely magical for me. I just thought it was so beautiful, and watching and being with people and doing my own healing in that process of opening, releasing, sharing, connecting, listening. Yeah. Oh, I don't know what else to say. It was just magical. So yeah, that there was a lot of movement and transformation that happened.
And in these spaces, excuse me, but I really would love to ask this question right now about in feeling that sense that you just described. It sounds like as a group, you really dive in fairly quickly and you build trust quickly. And I'm curious how you would describe that. What is the practice that you take each other into with? What is it foundationed upon, if you'd be willing to share with us.
Absolutely, yeah. I one of the most beautiful things about jamming over the years is how evolutionary the learning is, because every experience It's a yes and, in the spirit of improvisation, we yes and, okay, what did we learn there? How did that work? What was great about that? Okay, great. How do we build on that? Okay, we tried that out. Maybe let's try it this way next time. Let's see what happens that way. Okay, cool. And the spirit of that, but it doesn't just happen within one jam, it happens across all these jams. So we are benefiting from the learnings from the Anatolia jam in Turkey, and we're benefiting from the learnings of the Northeast Jam in the, northeast part of the US, and from the learnings in Toronto and the learnings in, among the Men Raised as Men Jam. We are benefiting from all of these different community learnings over time. And it's very powerful. And so to build trust, one of the things we've really learned is that what we're doing is really welcoming and slowing ourselves down. Because with speed and the way that we move is particularly in this last, I don't know, 2 decades, 3 decades of humanity, speed has been such a, I will say, a detriment, such a huge detriment to like human connection, human awareness, and being able to actually come up with meaningful solutions, meaningful interventions to actually shift the course away from destruction and towards regeneration. And so one of the first things we're doing is just slowing down and building a container. And by container, I mean like a set, a way of relating with agreements, with intentions, with grounding, with welcome that actually can bring forward more of who we are. So that's where we start. We start with building this very profound container. And a lot of that happens in the first 3 hours of just offering ideas, sharing again from the yes anding of learnings over decades now, and building that container and then deepening that container. And one of the kind of first major things that happens after that container building, or part of that container building process, is doing a check-in and a check-in circle, which is checking in. Where am I right now? What is alive for me in this moment? How am I feeling? And slowing that down enough and having each person having an opportunity. As we know in circle, there is this deep opportunity for people to share what's there in their hearts and to bear witness by others. And so having that opportunity, and we use this tool called the Zones of Awareness and Learning, which is a map of like what each of us has inside of us, a comfort zone, a stretch zone, and a panic zone. And recognizing that if we can meet each other in that stretch zone where I'm able to take off a mask, be real, be honest about what's happening for me, and you're able to meet me there with your listening, stretching without judging me, by not interpreting what I'm saying, by not trying to fix me or freeze me, if you can do that and I can do that, then we are able to alchemize something very profound and, powerful, because then we're both in that space of learning. And that itself is part of the healing process. And so that's how we kind of, the container building and the check-in is kind of the, initiation deeply into the rest of the experience, which just then, proceeds to use different kinds of practices and experiences, embodied art, movement, conversation, dialogue, all different things to move us forward and to continue to learn and grow and heal together.
Wow, that is really that really makes one, at least for me, feel that I'm there with you in that experience. Thank you for that. And how that really resonates and reverberates and deeply synthesizes with, of course, what we call restorative practices formally, right? And for ancient times, although with all respect for the ancient ones that brought this forward to us. And who knew really that the first space is finding out together what we have in common and value to create that container together, right? The Thanksgiving of the Haudenosaunee, for example, has really resonated deeply with me from my experiences in this field of restorative justice, coming back to the what do we share? What do we share? And I'm curious, Shilpa, besides physiological needs, What do you feel like we share as needs, as human beings, as two-leggeds, you know? And two-leggeds, of course, being one aspect of a giant dimension of life and spirit in this world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that, Molly. I mean, I one more thing I could add about the jam is that it was held at the Ben
Yeah.
Lomond Quaker Center, which one of the things we talk about is that entire space. It's beautiful. They're beautifully tall redwood trees there. And all of those trees, all of that land was clear cut almost 150 years ago. And so we are literally on the land where regeneration has happened because of a changed relationship to the land. You know, so I mean, that land obviously for generations, thousands of years, those root balls, they estimated 2,000 years old, existed, and people stewarded that land, the Lone people, the Aswaswas band in this particular case. And when settlers came, they clear cut it. And other people after that decided to steward it towards regeneration. And so that possibility that exists, I think, is part of the restoring and exactly what you're naming, you know. And this, I think, is something that all humans share. I've had the great honor to be able to travel around the world to many, many countries, work with many people, jam in many languages, from Urdu to Spanish to Hindi to Turkish, you know, to Arabic. Many languages. And what I can say in my experience is that every single human being on this planet is unique, completely unique. It's astounding. It's staggering, actually, in a way. When I like encounter each human soul in each of these circles, it's staggering. And we all have these common threads that run through our hearts and spirits, you know. And that those threads to me are love. Desire to love, to share love, to be seen, to see, a desire to connect, to be in connection intimately with self, with each other, and with the earth and all life. And a desire to be of purpose, of service, to make some kind of meaningful contribution, which could be in any way. There's like infinite, you know, we have 8 billion people on the planet. We have 8 billion ways to make beautiful contribution in this world. And so that I think is true. Like I have yet to encounter someone who doesn't have those needs. And the thing that is so tragic maybe in our world is how easily systems can be erected or maintained to destroy those needs of love and being loved, connecting and being connected and being on purpose in a meaningful way. And yet, we know through human history that systems can also be erected that support all of those things. We've seen them. We would not be here without that. And so, this through line, you know, we have one through line of hurt people, hurting people, and creating systems that hurt people. And we have another through line of healing people who are healing people and creating systems that are healing people. And we have the gift to kind of sometimes maybe we're in that first one. And it's not because we want to be, but we're there for whatever reasons in our life. But we always have the option to be in the other one. We always can continue to move and continue to shift ourselves in that healing trajectory together. So that is what I'd say is something we all share. And, you know, we also do all share hurt and being hurt and hurting. And there is something powerful about that too, that recognition that no one's like a unicorn out there who, like, oh, I'm the only person who's ever hurt someone, or I'm the only person who's ever been hurt. We are also
Right.
all that too. And
And
there is that also possibility of healing there as well.
you said something so profound about like can we slow down and welcome in the authentic container that can hold that for one another. And I started thinking about the work of Martine Prechtel and the duality of grief and praise and celebration, and how the we have to do each one all the way through culturally, like feel it and hold it all the way through in order to have the other. Is that and And it just reminded me a bit of, sort of the unofficial framework of today's conversation, microcast, which is, alchemy. Is it possible for justice to be alchemy, for circles to create potential for alchemy? And of course, I could say my answer to that would be a resounding yes, as a witness of it. Yet I would really love to hear more, and I bet people would love to hear more from you on what can we do in the tension of a system that wants to do everything to prevent us from being that together while we're in these systems, while there's still the dominant colonized systems that we're under. I mean, to be realistic, we're still dealing with them, right? And yet,
Very much
the good news is there are so many millions of people every day, day in, day out. Thank you, everyone, all over the world, doing circle, working with youth, transforming, and being present. So what would you recommend to those who might be feeling that immense tension and pressure?
I mean, I think you gave yourself your own answer there, Molly, too, which
Sorry about that.
the coming together, is what I'm hearing. Like what helps me and myself is to remember I come from both lineages. I have both lineages. They live in me, there's an indigenous story about the two wolves that live inside each of us, One is fear and hatred and greed and selfishness, and one is love and compassion and generosity. And the child asks the grandfather, well, which wolf is going to win? The grandfather says, these wolves are always battling inside of you. And the child says, which is going to win? And the grandfather says, the one you feed. And I think it is so easy, and I have infinite compassion, honestly, that it is easy to feed the other wolf in these times, especially. We are human beings from neuroscience. Our mirror neurons are gonna fire. If I see Donald Trump doing what he's doing, if I see, different ICE agents showing up with this kind of violence, whatever I'm seeing, if I'm seeing the war in Gaza, like it is impossible for that not to affect me and to either turn me towards wanting to hate back, fight back, numb out. Run away, hide, whatever those reactions are. And we talk about this also in the jam. We look at our reactions and look at them individually, interpersonally, and collectively because they're all there. We're only a mirror. We're only a microcosm of the whole, So in any moment, that is so understandable. And I think the big shift for me has been to instead of condemning my mirror neurons from react, just try to understand them, see them, slow them down. When I slow them down, then I have an opportunity to be like, okay, but what do I want to feed forward? That's okay that I had this reaction in this moment. It's so understandable, so comprehensible. And then there's the next moment. And then the next moment, what do I want to feed forward? And then there's the next moment. And the next moment, what do I want to feed forward? So that question, that inquiry is there. That is the alchemy, that is the unwritten, that is the unknown and the mystery, which is what I get really, really, really excited about, the mystery, because there's so much mystery right now. And every time there's a force that's trying to say, this is what it's going to be, and this is how it's going to be, and this, and I'm like, you don't know. They didn't know that the dams that are on the Klamath River were going to come down in their lifetime, but they fought for it anyway. And the salmon, they thought the salmon wouldn't start running again for months, and they came back in 10 days. Like it is so mysterious. We do not know. We do not know. And how can we be more comfortable with that unknown? Well, the way I can do that is being in community. I cannot hold the immensity of all of this alone. It is not meant for one human soul to hold that. I need to be with others. I need to be with many different kinds of people in different moments, in different times, in different ways. But that connectivity, that circle, and however you define that circle, the circle can be a group of families can be a circle, right? A circle can be a group of friends, from across different experiences, like a circle. But the diversity of a circle, the more diverse the circle is, the stronger the circle is, just like in an ecology, Monocultures make us, monocultures lead to sickness, they lead to death and disease. Diversity in an ecology, the more diversity we have, the more beautiful the ecology is, the more sturdy it is, the more resilient it is to different threats that come its way. And that is what I think we are exploring, like as human beings. The tendency in this time of fear is to go to just who's me and mine? Who's got me? Who's just like me? Who's gonna just be exactly like me? And that is a problem both on the right and the left and across the world. Right? It is not a, like it, I just want to go to people who know me just like me. That is not strengthening our ecology of humanity, right? The alchemy comes when we lean in to the differences, when we're willing to make these new buildings, these new alliances. One little story I'll share just from the jam that came was a friend was in the jam and was sharing. She was going through a moment. She's like, "Well, I haven't been incarcerated. I don't know. The everyone here is so wise. It's I'm not wise enough. I don't have anything to contribute to this conversation. Why am I here? Why am I here?" And I sat with her and I heard her and I said, "I understand why that might be coming up for you. And I want to kind of invite you to look at it from a different angle. Like, we are here rebuilding the wholeness of our humanity. Friends of ours here in this room were kicked out of the world. And they have been able to re-enter the world. And you are here in this world and you have things to share with them. You have things to learn with them. But the big point that we're doing is we're building and reconnecting. We are reweaving our human web. And without you, that web is incomplete. Without any of us, the web is incomplete." And so I get the story that comes in. I get the attack that comes in from our inner critics, reinforced by social justice structures sometimes, other times reinforced by the right or media in a way that is very violent. All that I understand it. I understand where it comes from. And that's that moment. That's that wolf moment. Which wolf do I feed? Do I feed disconnection, not belonging, fear, isolation, or do I feed connection, curiosity, wonder? Right? I have choices there. So yeah, that's what I would say about some of the alchemy,
That is such a beautiful story and one I'm sure we can all relate to. Hello. I just my heart is filled with gratitude to you and Kate Prannis, also Carolyn Boyce Watson, for that very point. Posters on the walls in schools with the seven core assumptions, reminding us that each human being has a gift to bring.
Yes.
I can't thank those two enough for what they brought with those seven core assumptions. So if listeners haven't heard about those, Living Justice Press is a friend of ours, have been for a long time, and they have free posters on their website of the seven core assumptions that help mirror back to us what Shilpa, you're sharing here with this very real story. Lived experience from the recent jam. And that's to convey to each other, if I'm hearing you correctly, in the implicit and explicit, as you did so beautifully with her, that you belong here. You belong here. You may not know why. You may not have found like your core raison d'être. That's okay. You belong here and you are unique. Like you've been saying throughout this time together conversation, everyone has something to bring to the table. And everybody without you, it wouldn't be the same. We would be missing a piece.
Yeah.
But that has been taken from us systemically. And
Yeah.
I I'm a big fan of Tema Okun for that reason, also because Tema shares with us the characteristics of white supremacist systems, the systemic characteristics, and you named one of them being, the speed at which the rate and speed at which we are driving ourselves into the ground and expecting that of each other, and that's reciprocated in systems. So,
Yeah.
anyway, I wonder about if we could go back to a little bit around the circle and group wisdom, because alchemy is something that perhaps can be accessed, whatever that means, and maybe you could speak to that. Like, what is the alchemy from an individual surrendering and connecting in to group wisdom? What does that mean, and how does that open us up to perhaps a deeper understanding and even insights into moving forward?
Thank you for that. There's so much to reflect on in what you've said, and
I'm
I'm
very verbose, so
you're great. You're great. I'm also verbose, so
thank you
no
for my
worries.
large sandwiches of questions. Yes, they're triple deckers, I know.
Well, I'll just say, incidentally, in that story that I was just telling, one of my teammates, she said to me, she's like, "We don't want everyone to go to jail to get this wisdom. That's not like what you were asking for. Yes, everyone needs to go through the same experience to arrive at this wisdom. We want to benefit from all wisdom and benefit from our own wisdom and each other's wisdom." And yesterday I was at a friend's sangha, and the last part of the prayer was, "May the merit of this practice be of benefit to all beings." And that's what I think is the alchemy, you know. Whatever the practice is, can it be of benefit to all beings? Well, how do I do that in a circle? Like, alchemy to me is a transmutation, right? And it used to be from iron to gold. That's what it meant. But now when I think about it, what it means to me is like co-creation of something beautiful, something meaningful, something durable, something that has, brings more love, connection, healing, purpose, right? These core things that alchemy, right? For me. So when I think about that, then what it means to be a part of a circle is to open myself to what is there in my own heart, in my own experience, and that can be my pain, that can be my struggle, that can be my deep questions, my seeking, that can be also just the like stuff that's stuck inside that wants to come out. And if I can open myself to see that, slow down enough to really give myself permission to see it, and then to offer it forward without attachment that anything is going to happen except in the offering. It's just the offering of it. And the circle is there as a place, not for anyone to take it on or absorb it or fix it or make it better, but just to be with it, to be with me, to be with the things, to be with it. And in the being with it, this is the magic, Molly. I don't even really know. I don't know if we can put human words to the magic, but in the being with it and allowing the earth to also be part of it and ourselves to be there with it, what all these different its are, and ourselves, which is truly what's there in our hearts and our spirits, right? When we're with what's there in our hearts and our spirits, and we're with each other, that's where the alchemy happens. Because something that was once so solitary and alone and isolated, and therefore ricocheting around in the brain and the mind and creating all kind of additional story that is usually a violent story towards ourselves or towards others, is now out, it's free. And then the freedom that emerges in ourselves from that freedom, and then the freedom that we feel with each other and seeing each other get more free, and then putting that down and letting Mama Earth take it and compost it and turn it into flowers and fruit. That's what happens. And so that to me, I mean, I get chills just talking about it because I think about, I've been there and you've been there, you've seen it. I don't know how to explain it. Only that we move from the solitary towards the collective. We move from the isolation into connection. And there's a move from, I think it's what, I love the movie Inside Out, right? Because it just made it so simple for, like this pain and joy we're talking about with Martine Prechtel's work, The Grief and Praise. We only grieve what we love. Well, we love we love our own selves too, even if sometimes that's hard to find. And so when that's lost, that feels we feel grief. We feel grief when people are not being seen more deeply. We feel grief for the poverty that is being pushed on people. We feel grief for the violence and the war. We feel grief. All these places of grief exist, you know. But when we can bring them out, bring them together, we see each other, and we can't go backward from there. We can only go forward because what is now seen cannot be unseen. As much as people try in all kinds of ways to pretend, I don't see that, it doesn't. The reason George Floyd transformed our world is because people stopped and saw it. And the only reason they could stop and see it, maybe, is because of COVID, because we were not running 100 miles an hour. And the only reason COVID happened is because of this and because of this. We can go back 100 ways, you know, but what we can say is we see something, we cannot unsee it. People can do their best to try to erase history, pretend, whatever, but this is all machinations of the mind. Ultimately, when I slow down and I connect to my senses and I connect to each other, I cannot unsee what has been seen. And then it makes things move forward. And that's where we're at. And I think that's the power, that's the alchemy, you know, that's happening right now. As both things are moving, you know, we're moving, the hurt train is moving faster and picking up speed. But I really believe the healing train is also picking up speed. It's just less visible to us because it
Thank
doesn't
you
own a
for that.
major media network, you know. That's all.
That is such a beautiful statement, and I hope we all can really receive that right now, because we need to hear that right now, that there is that part as well, the healing, the potential and the capacity for it. And of course, I mentioned your blog earlier, and I know we're heading towards our microcast conclusion today, but I want to point people's attention to the incredible recent blog posts that you have quite a few of them that are recent because you're very prolific. But you wrote a
Look, I
post.
try for one a month. That's my
And
goal. If I can get one a month out, I'm like,
that's
wow,
Substack
I did
Shilpa
it.
Jain, by the way, just to let people know again. Go to Substack Shilpa Jain and you will find her incredible pieces there. You wrote about a dream that you had of Elon Musk.
Yes.
Do you feel like describing that
Sure.
and how that, like you're so eloquent with how you describe how you pulled Gossamer stories and contextual awareness out of his
Yeah.
brain, I guess. Can you tell the story about that and how that might
Sure.
weave into how we
Yeah.
hold potential contextual awareness and maybe even compassion for those who we might be very tempted to feed the wolf towards,
Yeah.
the wolf of hatred.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can tell the story. This dream came to me a few months ago. Incidentally, when I was at a very powerful retreat of women of color, and we were doing all kinds of amazing ceremony together, so it's not surprising, and it is, you know, kind of right on time that I had this dream that I met Elon Musk, and I'm talking to him, and I'm like, you know, you don't look so well. Can I help you in some way? And he opens his mouth, and I start pulling strings out of him, like this, like kind of like wispy gossamer, almost Harry Potter like, you know, that kind of stuff. And each one I can read the story. I'm like, oh, this is a story of you having to move as a child and that pain of uprooting. Oh, this is a story of your grandparents being Nazis and communicating those messages. Oh, this is a story of, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm moving through, and at the end, I come to the very long, it's like the longest string, it's so deep. And it's like, oh, this is the story of abuse, kind of violent abuse you received as a baby. And I look at it and I'm so shocked by it. And I turn to look at him and he's turned into a very little boy, like a 9, 10-year-old boy. And I'm like, and he then he I'm like, he looks surprised, and I look surprised because we didn't expect that story. And I realize it's maybe something he's never known about himself in the dream. Just everybody, fair warning, there is no, please don't sue me for this. It's just a dream. I did not
Yeah.
say this is true, but this is my
Right.
dream. This is what happened to him. And when I look at him and then I see this little boy, then he tries to say something kind of weird and like oddly sexual. I'm like, oh no, this is, I was like, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. That's not what's here. This is really big stuff. I think you need time to integrate this. What does this actually mean? You know, and he kind of closes his mouth and he walks away, this little boy. And I woke up in the dream and I was just like, wow, you know, everything comes from somewhere. You know, this is the law of, what do they say, the metaphysics right now? Matter cannot be created nor destroyed. Like it is coming from somewhere, it is going to somewhere. And so, whatever Elon Musk's story is, you know, whatever it has to do with his own, but there is somewhere that that violence came from. And I think that is true for, and in myself included, anytime I commit an act that it feeds the other wolf of violence, right? I know that it came from somewhere, somewhere, you know, in my own ancestral lineage, in my personal lineage, and whatever. It comes from somewhere. My human lineage is having an amygdala that has a fight reaction. You know, I know it comes from somewhere. And that doesn't mean that that's where it has to go, but that's what it gives me some compassion. I mean, I look at Donald Trump, I feel exactly the same thing. I'm like, I don't know if this man ever had a moment of actual, honest empathy, care, compassion that he ever received in his life as a child. I don't know. I don't know. He doesn't seem to have any. I never seen a genuine smile on his face, one that like comes from his heart. I've never seen that. And that for me breaks my heart. I'm like, what a sad, sad, you know, we talk about sad, like how sad is that? To never have like smiled a genuine smile or have like a genuine connection. And I feel that might be true for him. I really don't, I can't, you know, I don't know him, but everything I've ever seen, which is a lot, I've never seen that reflected. And then I look at the people who are following him and I see the same thing, this kind of deadness in them. It's just like there's not, it's not a genuine love. It's like something else. It's like it feels more vengeful, it feels more calculating. And then, you know, so my heart breaks for that, honestly. I feel sadness for that because from that place, all kinds of violences can continue to grow.
And the gap that you depict, again, thank you for sharing that fictional, very fictional dream scenario, because I really feel like that is such a powerful depiction of what happens in real life if we can and are willing to do that together in this work we call restorative, to open up and be willing to see that context even in those we would be tempted to hate
Yeah.
and have
I think that
justification,
absolutely,
many
Molly.
justifications, yet
Yeah.
can
Well,
we?
yeah, go for it.
No,
Sorry.
you go.
There's just another, the dimension, the differences. The difference is really important. The difference is the willingness of a person who does those things to say, I want to slow down. They don't want, I've never heard anyone be like, I didn't. I don't, I'm not accountable for what I did. No, they're like, I did something. It came from somewhere. Here's all the context. And we can have more compassion. We can see a fuller picture of this human being. And the human being is also like, I am here to do some repair, whatever that might look like. Maybe the carceral system is not a very reparative place. It's not necessarily folding a person back in and helping them repair whatever harm they've caused and trying to like build something better forward. That's not what's happening. If that system did that, we'd be in a different place, but it doesn't do that. But the person, what's different here about Trump or Musk is that there's the willingness to account and have compassion for themselves and for their story and compassion for others who may be hurt by what they've done. That is the difference, you know? And I think in a restorative model, there's often sometimes that misunderstanding, right? Like, oh, people's context erases their harm. No, people's context gives flesh and blood to their harm. Like it makes us understand and it makes us more curious about, well, what about all that stuff that's systemically happening on that back end when we, you know, don't give people jobs and have racism and have injustices that have lasted generations? What happens on that back end? And still not everyone does that, and still there's a count, you know? So there's some like opportunity there. to see what is happening, for that person on the other side and themselves. Like, that is what I'm not, I haven't seen that yet, right? That's why it's a dream, not a reality. But doesn't mean it can't happen. Maybe one day it will. We can still hold out hope.
Well, by doing, I think maybe what you're saying, and you let us know, let me know, is that by doing that inner work, though, that actually let's really understand that that counts.
Yes.
That if we can perceive, even in this way, to those who have done atrocities, while still obviously asking for accountability, requiring that, and seeking for the larger mystery of it too. These are hard and complex pieces to hold, simultaneously, I know. But being the daughter of what society terms a monster is why I do this podcast, why I founded Restorative Justice on the Rise, and why I want to hold these complexities together with amazing people like yourself, you know. There's no easy answers, but by being willing to dive into this and find a way to alchemize these energies, and to be brave, to be willing to admit that we do have these two wolves within us, all of us, right? I know we're going a little over, a couple minutes or less with concluding thoughts about what we call restorative and what is alchemy and what is their interrelationship. Anything else you'd like to say about what I mean, we've gone in many directions today. It's been amazing.
We've covered a lot of territory.
What would you like to leave for our listeners who are an incredible network of everything from academics to courtroom advocates to judges to youth worker, people from all over the world? So what would you like to say to them right now?
First, I wanted to say thank you to them with so much gratitude in my heart. And I can imagine and have known people in similar places where that work is not easy to do, especially in this time, especially with cuts and attacks on that work. And so I would just want to say thank you so much for everything that you're doing and that you're willing to stand up for, and that the gift that you have of continuing to see people's humanity and to chart and try to find ways forward and create them and, make them happen and to the best of your abilities, is a huge gift, and it is not unrecognized. It is absolutely crucial. So thank you so much for doing that. Thank you, Molly, for doing this. I try to remind myself nothing is a given. N none of us have to, it's not like a, this is not, this is a choice. This is action. This is heart work. You're doing, folks are doing out in the world. This is soul work, spirit work. We're doing, I'm doing, because there's something deeper there that we care to, and that source is the ultimate source for me. That is the rechargeable battery, right? To go to again and again, and then to recharge with each other, because it is lonely out there. It is hard sometimes, and complexity is, it can be messy, can be simple too. One of my friends, he once said to me, I think he was quoting someone else. He's like, contradiction kind of is here in the mind, and then we move to paradox, which is like, this is true, and this is true, and this is true. That lives in the heart, and then we can move to oneness also. That actually, all of this is same sides of a coin, right? Like, even the two wolves, it's not a duality. It's like there's still one being there. And that being has that comfort stretch and panic zone. And that being has space. And that being has space to continue to go forward and to forgive ourselves and forgive each other and keep trying. And we're up here again doing our best, And that being, that oneness that, I work in conflict a lot. And so every time I see, I'm like, conflict is a mirror. Pretty soon I get to the point where somebody's saying, I just really want to be seen. And the other person's like, I just really want to be seen. And literally they're saying the same thing. It's it's so deep, you know? And so I just want us to like have that wisdom that's there with us, that it already is there inside of each person who's listening to this, I'm sure. And also just to the invitation to just keep connecting, because it's here with us, you know? So yeah, that's what I'll conclude with today.
Thank you so much, Shilpa. And is there anything this global network can do to help lift up the amazing jam that you'll be doing again next year, specific to restorative? Any
Yeah.
information you want to share with people?
I think all the info is there on the website. I think the
Okay.
invitations are there. They speak to folks, you know, who are ready for them, and those who are not, it's okay. It's all fine. It's not, I really don't believe in one size fits all. You know, there's really like different strokes for different folks, and it's beautiful. And I love that. And so that's, yeah, that's there, and people are welcome to check it out if it speaks to them. And I just, yeah, the thing that I've really learned over time is just I just keep sending positive regard and energy to each other, regardless, because there's so many different places that people are standing with their unique story and their unique gift. And the one thing we can always receive is appreciation for that, because it's not easy to stand where anyone's standing and trying to make a difference from that point. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for this exceptional session together, conversation, and to everyone listening in, thank you for being out there in this world every day. In your presence and your beingness, especially, and of course, for what you're doing. And look forward to at some time in the near future, hopefully, a live jam session of sorts with Shilpa. We'll keep you posted on that. This has been a new episode, September 2025, of Restorative Justice on the Rise, again with the extraordinary Shilpa Jain.
Oh,
Thank you,
thank you.
everyone.
Thank you, Molly. You're amazing.